This is the Startup Onion that you are listening to, dear listeners.
I like onions.
Yeah, startups are a lot like onions. let's peel back some layers.
Yeah.
So I'm Ollie. I'm hosting today. I work for Codebase as VP of R&D, and I'm here with Alex. Do you want to say hi quickly?
Yes. Hi there. I'm Alex. I'm a proud Scot. I live in Edinburgh, and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Playmaker.
Yeah, a proud Scot. But actually, tell us, where are you right now?
Where am I right now? I'm in San Francisco, proudly in San Francisco at the moment.
Nice.
I've even bought a I Love SF t-shirt for my son. So,
have you noticed how everywhere sells t-shirts here? It doesn't matter if it's like a bar or a bakery or whatever. Just they all have t-shirts.
Yeah. To be fair, it's sunny, right? Everywhere sells jumpers in Scotland. So
yeah. We need to get some tech scaler swag, I think.
Knitted, chunky
sweaters.
Tech scaler Guernsey jumpers or something. Yeah.
So tell us a bit about yourself, your background. Before we get on to what you're doing right now, it'd be good to hear about you as a person.
So I've always been basically obsessed with entrepreneurship. Kind of really early on, even when I was at school, if I ever noticed a trend in like things that people were interested in. You know, there's always like weird trends at school with your friends, like, oh no, Pokemon cards or whatever. If I ever noticed a trend, I don't really know how it started, but I just remember going on eBay a lot when I was like 12 or 13. So this is like 2002, 2003. And I used to kind of just trawl through eBay. And then I sort of thought, if people are really interested in these things, why don't I go online and buy them in bulk? And then sell them in school at like a massive profit, because like people your age don't really necessarily know what it costs and they don't really care. They just want the thing that's in a craze right now. So I used to buy things in bulk and sell them in school. My best friend started doing the same. So we started sort of competing against each other. So we learned a little bit about, you know, how to run businesses differently to sort of beat your friend, which is quite fun. And then I started doing it actually on eBay as well and reselling things on eBay, which I loved. So I probably did like 500 or so trades over the years or so I was doing it, and that kind of really got me like interested in entrepreneurship. So I was always doing like little side projects, but ultimately I realized that the kind of the highest leverage on form of entrepreneurship in my mind was a technology company. But given that I'm a kind of I always call myself a non-tech generalist, so I feel like I can do pretty much everything that's not on the tech side. Obviously I have my specialties, but that's where I see myself. So after that, my career was kind of, I worked at Accenture as a data consultant after my master's, and then I worked at Freshworks. We can talk about this a bit more if you want, but
maybe just tell us a bit more about like Freshworks and what they do.
So Freshworks was really exciting for me because I joined Accenture knowing that it was like a large consulting firm and that I'd be put into different large companies, but ultimately it was like a stepping stone into the startup world. So from there, I thought I'd be able to get, you know, optionality, I'd meet interesting people. And that's basically exactly what happened. So they did training, and they took me out to a place called St. Charles, which is in near Chicago, which is kind of like, I think, where Accenture's base is. And we met people from all over the world who were starting Accenture that month. So there were like 100 people from London starting that month. It was pretty crazy. And people from Accenture Bolivia and Poland and whatever. And one of the like practice projects we were doing was to do with the Salesforce implementation. So I kind of got chatting to the guy who'd come over from the San Francisco office, and he was a Salesforce expert. So we got talking about SaaS and software and Salesforce and all the other opportunities. And then I, after the whole thing finished, I went back to the UK and I just sort of stayed in touch with him. And he emailed me like two or three months later and said, I'm actually leaving. And I was like, oh, that's a real shame, because we built a connection. And he said, I'm joining this new startup called Fresh Desk, which is what his name was at the time. And I looked it up and said, this sounds really cool. Please let me know when they're opening an office in London, because he was the first hire outside of India, I think, or one of the first hires. And then about 3 months later, he introduced me to the person starting the office. So I became the second hire in EMEA for Freshworks, who at the time were basically a customer support software tool. But since then kind of scaled out to become like a multi-product customer engagement software company from Chennai in India. So it's cool.
Nice. Do you think you'll ever go back to Salesforce implementation? So it sounds like one of the most stressful jobs I can imagine, to be honest. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
I mean, fortunately, depending on the way you look at it, I didn't ever actually have to do that. It was just like the training.
I ended up
working in something that was probably more complicated, which was like a front-to-back data transformation of UBS investment banks, kind of data flows. So that was my like first day on the job in Accenture. That was my first project.
God, that's a big task to take on. And you were also at Startup Brewing for a while?
Yeah, so after Freshworks, I was there for about 4 years or so. And, you know, I loved it, but ultimately I wanted to get even earlier. So I was just trying to think, like, how can I gain the type of experience that will be helpful when I start the technology company that I plan on starting without any kind of downside risk, basically. So I got closer and closer to the very early stage companies as Freshworks graduated through Series C and D and E and F and G and H, and it went that far with them challenging my alphabet on the spot. And basically, I started volunteering at Startup Grind, which is the world's largest startup community. And I just loved it because you're just around, I mean, you know, working at Codebase, you're around people that you love, like inspiring people who are doing things that you find interesting and who are trying to kind of change the way different industries are built. So it just kind of really struck a chord with me. And then shortly after I started volunteering rather, at the London chapter, I found out they had a global conference out in Silicon Valley. So I basically said, can I volunteer at the global conference? Because I thought, like, hey, what a better way to get behind the scenes than to, like, actually volunteer, and basically you can go and help out with as much stuff as you can, meet more people. So I did that, and then I met the founder and CEO of Startup Grind, which was great. And fairly quickly we got chatting, and he said, what do you do? Let's sync when you're back in London. And long story short, I ended up working there. And he said, come on and help us build our startup program. Which I did. So it was great. Loved it.
That's awesome. And yeah, I love Startup Grind. It's been such a mainstay of, like, the tech ecosystem in Scotland for so long. It's just been consistent and there and supportive. Yeah. And yeah, I love it. Shout out to everyone who organizes it. If you're listening to this.
It's not an easy job to run the local chapters, and there are 600 of them across the world in 120 countries.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, when I was there, I don't know what it is now, but it was 250 events a month.
Wow.
Every month, and then not including the global conference, which is out here in Silicon Valley every April. So it was a busy time, but yeah, like, all the people who work there are just amazing people. So
yeah. I think we've got it in Edinburgh, Glasgow, and Aberdeen now. I think there's an Aberdeen chapter, which is just great. So loads of startup experience. A non-tech generalist, I like that phrase. I think I'm kind of one of those as well.
Although, yeah.
You know me with no code, like, I feel a little bit more technical than I used to.
Yeah.
But I went to a talk just 2 nights ago here where it was about non-tech generalists and how right now belongs to them.
Oh, goodness.
Because all of these tools are empowering us to do everything. You know? And you can be a sort of designer with Canva.
Yeah.
Or, you know, sort of a web developer with Webflow or whatever. And it's a good time to be a generalist.
I think so.
And a good time to build products for generalists. Well.
Yeah.
But let's talk a bit about your startup. Like, that's what we're here for. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so Playmaker essentially is solving the complicated problem of making increasingly disparate customer data more accessible and more usable for go-to-market teams. So that basically means marketing, sales, and customer success people. And you know, ultimately, I was always in and around the startup ecosystem, always kind of working mostly in go-to-market, so mostly in those sort of marketing, sales, customer success type roles. But I'd also had the background of working in consulting, which is, you know, a certain type of kind of operating, even in a sales role, you can be a consultative salesperson. So I always had that lens on it. And then also was doing that data transformation project. So I feel like Playmaker for me is quite a good combination of all those things that I've been doing. And you hear people always talking about founder market fit, but I think it's funny when you actually experience it and you're like, oh, now I see how this makes sense as a result of all the things I've done in the past. So it's kind of like data plus decision making plus go to market.
Yeah. So what kind of decision making, what kind of, like, actions come out of it, you know?
Yeah. So ultimately we are helping companies to collect data from across the organization about all aspects of their prospects and customers. So that might be demographic and firmographic information from their customer relationship management software, which might be HubSpot, for example. You might have some enrichment coming in from ZoomInfo to give a little bit more information than they already have in their CRM about that person or company. data about how any prospect has been engaging with the organization so far. So have they been on the website? What pages have they been on? How long have they spent? Have they been reading reports and white papers? And have they been on webinars, things like that? They listen to podcasts. Mm-hmm. So you can track that. Anything that's measurable, essentially, we can funnel into our decision-making kind of model. And then, you know, to some extent, there are companies who have a free trial or a freemium product, so product-led SaaS companies, where there's also product usage data even before a customer has closed and started paying. So all of those things can be brought together to basically give people a pretty holistic view at any stage of the journey that a customer is engaging with your business of like how likely they are to be a customer and how likely they are to be a very high paying customer. Mm-hmm. So if we can funnel that information to the sales, marketing, success people at the right time with the right context, then they can make quicker decisions basically.
Yeah, yeah. We need to bring in a VP of sales like tomorrow and we're like 80% sure that means that this will close this deal. Or that's kind of how I'm picturing it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, based on this prospect's behavior either on your website or in the calls you're having with them or in the product, we think that, you know, they're pretty close to closing. They might need a little nudge over the line, basically. So whichever sales reps look after this territory, reach out to them now and make sure that you help them in the right way.
Send them a gift basket.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
A t-shirt.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Swag. Guernsey jumper.
Cool. So, it is a problem I've seen, you know, in the companies I've worked in, of just having all of these different data sources, you know, like you said, you have your HubSpot and then you have your intercom and you have, you know, your actual database over here and just another database. You know, it's just data everywhere. And so having a way to seamlessly bring that together and create action out of it rather than, you know, just a sort of dashboard or whatever. I think that just sounds so valuable to me.
It's a complicated problem, but really that's where the alpha is or where the opportunity is. I think if things are complicated in a way, that's a good thing because it means that there's room there for someone to come in and provide a service that they can then productize.
Yeah.
Like software as a service.
Yeah.
To do that.
Yeah.
So
as you were talking a bit about like for new customers as well, but I can see it for like churning customers and just like, you know, trying to predict like I've seen a few tools that do this kind of thing, but I think it's still like there's a lot to play for in that market.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there are lots of companies that have come in and tried to replace the CRM or, be another tool that one of the reps in this revenue or GTM team, go-to-market team, have to use. Ultimately, what we've heard from a lot of people we've been speaking to is that, you know, you're not necessarily going to come in and replace a HubSpot very easily. And if you are, it's going to be a really long, complicated sales cycle, which is not particularly good for, early SaaS companies, especially if you're not focusing on enterprise, where you might be okay with having that longer sales cycle. So what we're trying to do is create something that is called headless or invisible. If you imagine, it's not a tool that you necessarily have to log into. Maybe the person setting up the lead scoring model or parameters that you want to help you decide what data you want to see, they might log in, but the actual reps receiving the information will receive it in their CRM initially or in like a Chrome extension, so that can just float over whatever tab that we're already in. So we're trying to come into organizations without as much, whilst reducing friction in that process as much as possible.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, as someone who has, you know, we use a million different tools in Codebase and we try to sort of Marie Kondo them away. Like if they don't spark joy, you know, try and cut that SaaS tool and use a HubSpot feature rather than have a completely separate product. And for me, headless stuff is like, it just makes, if I can, for me, I've realized it's just, I just want to work in Slack.
Yeah.
And if you can have a thing that just talks to Slack and tells me everything I need in Slack, that's great. You know, and that's, you know, different for everyone else. But yeah, that's, I love that stuff. You haven't mentioned AI. We're in San Francisco. Is there an AI angle to this?
It's funny. I always think like, I don't like kind of bringing a technology to something and saying, look, let me try and find a problem to solve with this technology. I think it's better to, again, as a consultant, I think you sort of lead with trying to understand what people's problems are and then applying the tools that you have available to you, which obviously AI, you know, and all of its subcategories are many. But I think, you know, ultimately the main way that we're applying, for example, language models right now is in our integration layer. So obviously there are two parts to what we're building. One is, delivering the insights at the right time to the right person. But obviously the part prior to that is centralizing all the data and making sense of it. And that's our integration layer rather than the activation layer, which is the former. And that really is powered by language models, the way that we built it. So, you know, there are aspects of our product that's, you know, we're sort of thinking about how to factor it in, but really it's about understanding where there are problems to which AI, the application of AI will really help advance those things rather than just kind of bringing AI so that I can edit my pitch deck.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I mean, we've been to a few pitching events here and it's like, it is just there. It's for pretty much everyone of just like, they have that slide about AI. Have you registered your .AI domain name? It's hard not to get on the hype train while you're here, but you're right. Yeah. It's another tool to solve a problem and it might not be the right tool. I'd love to know a bit more about the company itself. So you and your co-founder?
There's two of us at the moment who are the full-time co-founders. We actually got a couple of early angel checks, so we've been using that to pay a front-end developer as well. But Efe, my co-founder, is the CTO, and I'm the CEO.
Cool. And so you're based in Edinburgh.
And Efe is in London.
How did you two meet?
So I mentioned that, you know, a long time ago, I always kind of wanted to start a technology company. As a non-tech generalist, you can use no-code tools and so on and so forth. But ultimately, I thought, you know, my skill set is better deployed on the things that I feel like I'm really good at. I don't think I can easily compete at the level I want to compete with people who've been coding all their lives. No code can take me so far. And I did a lot of mock-ups and things like that before I met Efe, but ultimately realized that I needed a deeply technical co-founder. So really, like, once I decided I was going to be like this year, or you know, this is last year I'm talking, once I realized that this year is the year that I'm going to officially start a company, I basically, you know, I started talking to people in my network. I started looking in and around Scotland. By the way, I was in London for about 10 or 11 years before I was in Scotland. So I had built a good network of people, but there's so many things that have got to align when you're starting a company. And, you know, obviously availability is the most clear one, right? And so I think I realized fairly quickly that any of the people that I'd kind of labeled or put an asterisk next to that, you know, maybe that could be a future co-founder, availability just wasn't possible for various reasons. So I thought, like, hey, I'm going to start looking around Scotland, and we can go into all the detail, but I'll give a quick summary first, which is that ultimately I really struggled to find someone in person locally. And so I realized that I'm going to have to find a place where I can efficiently as possible, run a repeated, you know, kind of a repetitive process to speak to as many people as possible, create a funnel, and then find the right person from a kind of mass of people that I've spoken to. So just get nose to the grindstone, basically, and do that.
Yeah. So it wasn't like I think often I hear, you know, co-founder stories, it's very organic, you know, it's like we were sat next to each other in a co-working space, we met at an event, but you were like, you know, like you had built your funnel, you had built your sort of system for meeting people and were like, I'm trying to find, this is the rough persona of what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I wish it was organic. I'm very, like, I've always been very envious of the people where they're like, oh, my co-founder's my cousin, and he's just like really amazingly technical, and he started another company before, and he was free, so we did, and, or, you know, we work together, and we just find, but it's, you know, it's rare. It is actually rare to have that, that fortune. So I think ultimately, as with anything, if you really want to do it, you just got to get on with it. There's no excuses. There's no anything. You just got to do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a, you know, go to market kind of person, I guess that's my lens on everything. So I just immediately thought, well, the most effective way to get a really high quality person out at the bottom of the funnel is to put as much in the top as I possibly can, and obviously try and manage the quality as well. So really I realized that, you know, I needed to find something online and potentially consider a remote co-founder, because I just couldn't, there was no real area or place to go to find co-founders in Scotland. I found the Y Combinator co-founder matching platform, which is, like, honestly a really amazing platform. It's essentially kind of like, I've never actually used Tinder, but crossover between Facebook and what I understand Tinder to be, mm-hmm. where you set up your profile, you talk about yourself and your background and your experience and your ideas, plural potentially, and the type of person you want to meet, set up some filters, and then you can just basically swipe through profiles, favorite people, and send up to 20 outbound requests a week. So I just repeatedly, every week I made sure I did that, sent a tailored message, and then figured out my conversion rate, booked calls, and got going.
Yeah. It does feel a bit like, you know, I always think finding a co-founder is like finding a partner, like a wife or a husband, yeah. you know, and it's like people say, just go out and do it. And it's like, how yeah. do you find someone you want to spend the next sort of 10 or 20 years yeah. or longer if it's a spouse, hopefully, yeah. with. And I think, like, I don't know, maybe we're the last generation of people who sort of met partners in like the pub or whatever,
yeah.
you know, and now it is all like very efficient. So you yeah. do have things like Tinder or whatever, where I have a friend who has a spreadsheet for her dating, you know, and it's wow. like, you know, that is, you've kind of mapped that over to yeah. finding someone that you're willing to go on that journey with. And I'm sure, did you meet, how many people did you have to like have a Zoom call with before you met Effie?
There are so many things to align, as we talked about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it definitely is akin to kind of like, that's what they call founder dating, you know, matchmaking, or all the same kind of terms apply. You know, you've got to think about, as we talk about, timing or availability, the actual ability for someone to take a certain amount of time out of paid work to work on something for long enough to get to the stage where they're either making enough money through revenue or able to get funding to carry on. And then risk profile, location and time zone and ability to travel, and do they want to move? Do they not want to move? Are they interested in your industry? Are they interested in other industries, but you really like them and maybe you have to compromise? Mm-hmm. Do they have the right, you know, it's not just, it's someone technical. They might be an AR expert, but actually you need to build a SaaS tool. So mm-hmm. there's lots of, you know, what programming languages do they know, and so on and so forth. So I, kept kind of trying to draw on the expertise of people I knew in my network as to like what type of things I should look for as well. And eventually ended up effectively creating a job description for what I was looking for so that I could constantly vet against it and some questions that I could ask, but didn't run it like an interview. You run it more like a sort of organic chat, but you know, the key points you want to ask and get across early. So.
Yeah. So you met Effie in London. That's not too far away. It's great. You've got, you know, 4 hours on the train or whatever. But I guess, like, this isn't a binary, but what's your opinion on, you know, is that like a failure of the Scottish ecosystem, or is that a wonderful thing that, you know, you've built your company in a more sort of outward looking way? A failure being not finding a co-founder locally.
Yeah. I mean, it's a difficult one, right? Because to answer your previous question, which I realized I didn't properly answer, you can send 20 a week, right? So I was basically looking for the whole of summer, 20 outbound requests a week on the YC platform. I'd send 20 religiously every week to people that I'd favorited, and I sent specific messages. Sometimes people have found other jobs and they forgot to take their profile down, and sometimes people are busy or they're not really interested in your industry or whatever. But generally, I found that from 20 invites, I would get maybe 10 responses and I would get maybe 5 calls. Mm-hmm. So I spoke to probably about 70 people, which is a lot of work.
Yeah.
It is a lot of work, I have to say. I had multiple calls, some days 5-6 calls. And then you're obviously having second and third calls as well. So the trouble with somewhere like Scotland is also, it's a small ecosystem. It's a small country. And within that, the default path for the most intelligent people is not often to go into the startup world. You know, they go and work for more traditional companies, or people come in and they go to Edinburgh University, or they go to Glasgow University or St Andrews, or insert great university. There's amazing places across Scotland. They then go down south, or they go to America, they leave. So, you know, the trouble also is that the culture of work in Scotland is slightly different as well. So the pool of people is smaller. So maybe the sheer numbers you need to go through to get there is difficult. But I also think there's a lot more that we should and could do. And I say we because I feel like I would want to be a part of that process, because I feel like there can something I can give there. To make it easier for people to know that there are other people out there who want to start businesses, where they are and all the details about them. So almost exactly like a co-founder matching, but directly for Scotland that everyone knows about. So at least they can tell people and they know that they can find others that are similar to them.
Yeah, for sure. Do you know Charlie Ward and the Robin Club down south?
Like, I do.
He ran a thing, basically did this, and just kind of tweeted out, like, you know, a list of people who were filling in this. It was like an Airtable form.
Yeah.
And tweet, and it's just like everyone can access it, everyone can see it. It's like very, very simple.
It's like Rob Gelb's one, right? And I think it's just ultimately starting there in a very lean and focused way is absolutely fine. I think it needs to grow more and more over time. And there also needs to be a culture of people. You know, again, as I said, like the most intelligent people feeling like the path is to start as an entrepreneur. I think that's maybe an entrepreneur first phrase, which is that they try and make people in Singapore or Toronto, wherever they are, feel like that's the path they should take. And there are so many amazing, intelligent people in Scotland, some of which are in the startup world, but many of which aren't. So
yeah,
if we can also get more people wanting to start companies because they feel like it's possible to do it in Scotland, then we should.
For sure. That is, you know, a big part of TechScaler and what we're trying to do is that very, very early stage. Like, hey, I still have a job. You know, I have responsibilities. I have, you know, kids and a mortgage to pay and all of that. But I could start learning a little bit and, you know, experimenting a little bit and seeing, like, is there, like, maybe some need for what I'm doing? And that just gives people a little bit, it de-risks stuff. You know, I think we have a lower tolerance for risk in Scotland than, say, here in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
We definitely do. And, you know, being able to help people feel more comfortable doing that stuff.
Yeah.
Really important thing. And yeah, big shout out to Rob Gelb for doing the co-founder matching stuff that he's been doing.
Definitely.
And the Discord, there's a Discord server as well that someone I saw set up as well for like co-founder matching.
Great.
You know, for me, I'm like, I love seeing that stuff bubble up organically from the community where it's like, you know, people just creating these things. And, you know, we're obviously it's like, it could be like a feature of TechScaler.
Yeah.
And maybe it will be in the future, but like, I just love seeing that stuff created by like hardworking individuals within the community.
Yeah. Ground up stuff is ideal. It shows that there's desire there. I mean, you know, this stuff wasn't happening, or at least I wasn't as aware of it maybe before, but there has to be liquidity in the market basically, right? Like what's so good about somewhere like Entrepreneur First, for example, when they select the 100 or 150 people per cohort that they do is that they really encourage people to crash people together and say, try and meet and test out co-founding with as many people as possible during the first week or 2 weeks. And like, it's completely okay to be very upfront with the questions and, you know, qualifying people out very quickly. That needs to be happening more frequently in Scotland, you know, crashing people together and saying, it's okay if you test something out, it doesn't work and you guys don't vibe together. Go and meet someone else.
Yeah. I love that, crashing people together. Yeah. Physically smashing them into each other.
That's kind of how I imagine it. I don't know why.
Startup forms out of the, you know, things happen there. Yeah, no, that's really interesting. It's great insight on like the Scottish ecosystem. So nice. Thank you for sharing that story. And so like, what's next for you? Like what are your plans for 2024? Like what's coming?
So really, you know, we're obviously we're a pre-seed stage. So we're just trying to ultimately find the right product partners, right? So we started building end of September. We closed our first customer before we'd written a single line of code. So that's where my no-code stuff came in. I basically pitched them on the product using some wireframes and said, you know, would you pay for this, basically? And they said, yes. So Efe and I have set ourselves a challenge to have to not write a single line of code that isn't being utilized by a paying customer. So we're trying to be very lean and focused, which I think is the right approach at this point. I think maybe that's where my Scottish influence comes in, trying to be kind of, you know, good with money and tight resources.
Thrifty. That's the one thing that us Scottish people are.
Yeah, but I'm very, you know, I'm very keen on building a global company from day one, but based in Scotland, an outward looking company for sure. So really right now we're about 5 months in and we have some paying customers, but we're still in private beta. So we're looking for product partners, people who will give us their feedback on what they need so that we can factor that into our roadmap and be as customer led as we can with what we're building. Because ultimately that's, I think, really the way that you get to product market fit more quickly. So that's really the focus right now. And, you know, I think fundraising is kind of part of that. It's more an enabler. It's not a focus. It's something that you need to do in order to build things out and then hopefully, you know, scale once you feel it's ready. But yeah, the focus right now is figuring out the right things to build next and who exactly we're building them for.
Yeah. And what's like, what's the thing holding you back there? What's like the bottleneck?
I think it's really, I mean, I'm doing a combination of using my network, either directly reaching out to people I know or getting warm introductions via people I know to others who are kind of target customers in our ideal customer profile, or doing outbound. I think ultimately the thing that's holding me back is not necessarily, you know, limited too much to being Scottish or whatever. It's mostly just getting in contact with people, right? It's a thing that you've got to, again, get your nose to the grindstone and make sure you meet as many people as possible who might have problems, try and learn as much as you can. And even when you're doing that customer development, if they don't come on as a customer, you're still able to develop your like perception of where you should build. So the thing that holds me back right now is just, getting in contact with more people, basically, and learning.
How many LinkedIn messages, connection messages can you send over day, or, you know?
Whatever your measure of whatever your input metric is. Mm-hmm. I think I try and measure input more than anything else, because that's what's in my sphere of control. So it's not just about charging at a wall. Sometimes it might be better to sit back and think about a more creative way to do it that has more leverage. You know, mm-hmm. content marketing, whatever it is a really useful way to do that as well.
Coming to Silicon Valley.
Yeah. So, you know, being here has been really, really helpful for me. Honestly, I think, like, I talked about this maybe with Anais the other day. By far, since I joined, when we moved back to Scotland, this has been like the highest leverage thing. Just being here, I think the way that you guys ran it with, you know, sort of structure, but hands off, you know, just encouraging people to do the right things. There's so much opportunity here, you know, someone can come out, and if they're driven and enough of a self-starter, which obviously people in the startup ecosystem are, there is just are infinite things to do. So being out here is great, and I really hope that it can continue as a movement for Scotland.
For sure. Me too. that kind of hands-off thing, and like the thing that's just blown me away is like I knew the people coming would be self-starters and, you know, make stuff happen and all that jazz, but like just every morning, you know, like the WhatsApp group that we have, you know, it's kind of just being like, I'm off, you know, I'm off to Palo Alto, I'm off to Menlo Park, I'm off to Santander, wherever. Yeah. It's like just pitching, meeting people, networking, making customers. And like, there's just the sort of, you know, group accountability moment where everyone's just like so busy that it encourages everyone else to be so busy. Yeah. And I love that, you know.
Definitely. It's not like, it's like, I think getting founders together who are at similar stages and putting them somewhere unique like Silicon Valley is just the best thing you can do. And you know, there's just so much knowledge sharing organically by being around other people who are doing similar things to you, and then, as you said, suggestions of, I'm going to this event, I'm meeting this person, you should meet them too, why don't you come along. That's been literally non-stop since I landed on the 12th until today, 28th, 29th.
It's pretty exhausting, isn't it?
It is exhausting, but also energizing at the same time, which is a really weird balance.
I think I've like, so most of the people that have been here have been kind of, you know, dealing with stuff back home between kind of 7 and 9 or, you know, 6 and 9 in the morning, and then basically doing a full day's work here, meeting people, and then going to a meetup, pitching in the evening. And it's fun and great, and you just like feel that energy. But, you know, by sort of 10 o'clock, you're just like, just exhausted.
But you share in that with the other founders, and that's what's great, you know. I think the fact that it's a time-boxed thing, I kind of hate that phrase, but it means you, whenever something like this is time-boxed, you know, like, I'm going to give it my absolute all from beginning to end, because I can probably sort of take a breather a little bit once I get back, but I don't want to do it before I leave because I'm like missing out on something.
And I think that's, I don't know, I always just get very enthusiastic when I come here. I think I might be an AI bro now. Like, I'm not quite sure, but I find...
You have mentioned it 5 times or so in this podcast, so you are.
I'm going to start, I'm going to build something with it. I'll figure something out. But
you should change your name instead of Ollie. It should be like AI Lee or something like that.
Aioli.
Aioli.
A little lovely garlic dip.
It's making me hungry.
It's sort of onion.
Sorry.
That's a terrible joke. But yeah, I find that enthusiasm, like, it wears off. You know, it's like after a few weeks of being home, I'm like, you know, I'm back to just sort of, you know, a slightly more, I don't know, a bit more of a downer view of the world. And it's just like, I think coming here regularly, it's just really important to sort of remind yourself that people are enthusiastic and want to do stuff. And
yeah, and you see what other people are doing, right? Like, you know, the world around you is going on when you are doing whatever you're doing at home, wherever that is, or in the office, wherever that is. So, you know, I'm definitely like, it makes you hyper conscious of like, oh, there's this kind of like speedy ecosystem where everyone's doing this, that, and the next thing when I am at home doing X or Y, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So I think it's definitely a good influence, like on my mindset, I would say. Maybe you felt the same, just, you know, just knowing what's going on out here more mm-hmm. clearly whilst I'm at home. I think it'll encourage me to think more clearly about things, make more, you know, targeted decisions and things like that. So yeah.
Nice. Cool. Well, let me ask you one more question, just about like what like a good result of the next year looks like. Let's say the 2024. Let's say, what's like what would be just a great achievement for you to achieve with the company by the end of this year?
I think, you know, the pre-seed phase, and I'm not necessarily talking about people who only raise pre-seed rounds. I mean, like the before seed stage. Ultimately, you know, you build a high conviction hypothesis of the way that the world should be and how you can fit into that world. But ultimately it's also about testing. You haven't hit product market fit by nature of what stage you're at. So I think for us, we want to make sure that we always obsess about listening to the customers that we're speaking to and listening to the prospects we're speaking to, and have as many tight feedback loops as we can between now and the end of the year, to the extent that we feel we have a product that we want to, you know, we definitely know there's a market for, and we charge towards, you know, product market fit. Hopefully being able to kind of see in the near horizon as a seed round that will help us kind of scale up and hire more people to charge at that product market fit kind of horizon. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really the goal for this year.
Yeah. So learning more important than money right now. Money nice, but learning the main thing.
Yeah. Money is a measure of the value you're providing to people. So I think that's really mostly why we would want the money, is just like, you know, it's validation that you're doing the right thing. So yeah, I would say it's mostly learning, proven in the form of validation coming from customers in the form of money.
Yeah. Cool. Well, fingers crossed. Well, thanks so much, man. Great chat.
Thank you.